Today on Maine Calling, Alive to This, Maine people share insights to living fully. Have there been moments when you felt fully alive? Do you seek that feeling? Are you in tune to it every day? Some people find it in nature, others music, family, friends, or art. For many people, a crisis or death of a loved one jars us into a new state of awareness. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we offer a respite from the stress of election week and discuss this simple human question. What does it mean to live fully? A new book from Maine publisher Literal Books collects essays about living fully by 20 Maine writers. Their stories and reflections are a great starting point for all of us to think deeply about life. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. A new collection of essays by Maine writers takes on the question, what does it mean to live fully? The book's title is Alive to This. And today we'll speak with the book's editors and some of the contributors. Joining me, Kara Douglas, who is co-editor of Alive to This and owner of Fish Moon Yoga in Harpswell. And Aaron O'Mara is also co-editor of Alive to This and a contributor to the Harpswell Anchor. We invite you to join the conversation. What does it mean to you to live a full life? Have you had moments in which you feel fully alive? Well, we want you to share those with us. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you, and what a pleasure to be talking about this today, any day, but especially today when there's so much tension in the air. Kara, I'm going to start with you because it was an experience that you had that sort of gave you the idea for all this. Will you share that experience?
Absolutely. Thank you. There was a day a couple of summers ago where it was summer is my busiest time of work, and I had an unexpected break in an otherwise busy day and decided to take my kayak out and circumnavigate Harpswell's Bailey Island. I'm a pretty avid kayaker and have done spent a lot of time in wilderness conditions on the water and off. And the conditions that I met with, even though I had checked the marine forecast, I knew that the tides were favorable. It was a beautiful, clear day. The conditions that I met with were more rugged than I anticipated. Conditions on the ground aren't always what we expect them to be. And in order to navigate, there were really, really big swells, some of the biggest swells I've seen in Maine water. And in order to navigate well, I had to really deeply focus. I had to be completely present with conditions as they were, undivided attention. And when this happens, something changes inside of us. There's no room for fear. There's no room for overwhelm. There's no room for chatter. And coming through that experience later that day, I often process through writing. As a writer, it's kind of what I've always turned to. And I write a lot about wilderness experiences and what it feels like to be deeply connected within ourselves, to nature, with other people. And it just started this whole exploration about how do other people experience this? I know this isn't the only pathway to that undivided attention, that feeling of being fully alive. I was really curious about how other people experienced it. And I spoke with Agnes and Jim Bushell at Literal Books and pitched the idea, and they said, okay.
Okay, great. And Aaron O'Mara, you became co-editor when Kara came to you with the idea. And I will say both of you ended up with essays in the book. Aaron, what did you think of this idea and how did you frame it?
Well, thank you. I thought it's a great idea. And it's one of those questions that should be simple, right? It feels simple. But it's not. And it was something that, we wrote in our introduction that there were a lot of things that surprised us. And one of the things that surprised me was how difficult it is to access that thing. So here's this question. It should be simple, and it's not a simple question. And so, I had to sort of dig for the answer for me. And I think one of the gifts of the book is that you can tell that the authors who contributed also dug for that answer, and it's deeply personal.
Erin, how did you go about collecting the essays for this book? Was there a contest? Did you reach out to everybody you knew? I mean, the 20 contributors are so different. It's not as though there are 20 authors, people who would call themselves author at least first in their list of credits. How did you think about this, and how did you reach out to people?
So when Kara invited me to join her in this, I just jumped in with both feet and and rolled with it. Kara is a great connector of people and did a lot of reaching out, and Literal Books and Agnes and Jim did a lot of outreach. And then we were given a gift of this of bountiful creative work that we got to sort through, and that it was incredible.
Kara, Erin just said about some of the surprises that she encountered. What was a surprise to you?
Oh boy. One surprise to me was that as curious as I was about how other people encounter this state of connection and aliveness, I found that there were some essays that I would read and immediately, it was an immediate yes. And there were some that I would read and I wasn't entirely sure about. And I had to go back again and again and reread them until I could see that, oh, yes, this does belong here. And this is why. It really helped me to see differently that despite my curiosity, there was this little lens of bias where I know how to connect with that feeling of aliveness, and maybe I'm expecting that everyone connects with it in the same way, even though that's not what I was searching for. Erin and I spent a lot of time walking together, talking through these essays, helping us to see them differently,
Yes.
and really processing through it together. And it was a real delight to me that we could do that together because this book is so much stronger because of that partnership. And the ways that Agnes coached us through, all of it was surprising in lots of ways. We got to know ourselves better by doing this.
Yeah, we're
Well,
a fan of walking meetings now. Sorry to interrupt.
well, speaking of Agnes, she's on the line now. Agnes Buchel is a writer and editor, professor emerita in liberal arts at the Maine College of Art and Design, and co-founder of Little Literal Books. Her most recent novel is Monkey. Agnes, thanks for calling in.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Jennifer.
People who don't know about Literal Books, I want to let you know a little bit. It's a small publishing house based in Portland, and you focus on Maine writers, correct?
That's right. We're dedicated to publishing Maine writers and artists as well.
And Literal Books for a while didn't exist. Tell us about bringing it back, how it started, and how you brought it
Sure.
back.
Sure. I mean, we started Literal Books in 1975. It was a group of women. We called ourselves the Portland Women's Group, and we wanted to publish women's writing. That was our goal. We published two books in 1975 and 1976, one of which was called Balancing Act. And this was a book of poems by 10 Maine women. And interestingly, one of those women was a law student at the time named Janet Mills. I don't know if everyone knows this, but Janet Mills is a very good poet. So we published those two books, and then we were young and we just let it go and decided to live our lives. So fast forward 40 years. In 2018, we were the same group of people, many of the same people. We were retired and we decided to revive Literal Books. And we did another Balancing Act, which was Balancing Act Two, a book of poems by 50 Maine women this time. And at our launch, Governor Mills came. She had just been elected governor, and she came to our launch. It was really an amazing event. And since then, we've published about four or five books a year, all Maine writers. We try to have art in all of our books by Maine artists. And we also do events. For example, this coming Saturday, we're co-sponsoring the Portland Poetry Festival with Back Cove Books. And we also do a monthly virtual program called Literally Alive, where we have writers appear and talk about their work. So we're pretty busy, and Alive to This is our most recent book.
I love the name Literal Books. I love that it's a homophobe, a phone to the word literal, and also that means, you know, the area of the water that's near the shore. And obviously you're based in Portland, so it's really beautiful. And the book is beautiful. You know, one thing I noticed, Agnes, is that the paper feels nice. The photographs in the inside of each cover are really transparent photographs, really special. Tell us about the decision to publish books this way. I can't even imagine how much more expensive it is.
It's true. Well, we have an amazing book designer, Lori Harley, who does these amazingly beautiful books. And that was our goal, was to produce books that were art objects in themselves and to always include art by main artists. We want the books to represent the work. You know, the work inside is wonderful. In all of our books, our poetry series, Contemporary Maine Poets, we have 12 books in that series. So the work is beautiful, and it deserves to be presented in a way that is attractive and that makes the reader feel that there's an experience involved in holding the book and looking at it and reading it.
Well, before we let you go, I want to ask you about Alive to This and what you're hoping that here in 2024 people come away with when they read the essays in the book.
Well, I think I agree with Kara and Aaron on this, particularly that 20 different people have 20 different takes on what it means to live fully and what those experiences are like. And I think that when you have a book that has 20 different points of view, it allows you to really experience those perspectives in a very intimate way. One thing that I wanted to add also was talking about reaching out and how we invited writers to be part of this. One thing that I really wanted to do was to include new Mainers in the book. And so I reached out to Reza Jalali, and he in turn reached out to people he knew in that community. I really think that that makes the book so much richer and more more representative of the state, the diversity of the state, and the amazing voices that we have here that Literal Books really tries very hard to give a space to.
Agnes Buchel, thanks so much for calling in. Agnes is co-founder and publisher of Literal Books based in Portland. We are talking about the book today that's entitled Alive to This. It's a book of essays by Maine writers talking about what it feels like to be fully alive. And I want to delve into that a little bit, Kara, because you had this feeling of, some people might call it flow, concentration of life being more vivid and being more intensive when you had this kayaking experience. But I'm wondering if that's sort of universal, if being fully alive means to many people to be in this sort of hyper-aware sense of your senses, or does it mean something else? Have you found other meanings that you hadn't considered before you read the essays?
Absolutely. A state of aliveness doesn't necessarily have to be one that's high energy or saturated with vividness. A state of aliveness can be found in a very still moment. It can be found in reflection. It can be found in engagement with work. Anything that juxtaposes the aspects of ourself that might reconnect in a different way, and that could be a deeply relaxing experience, or it could be a deeply enlivening experience. It also could be in moments of grief where we find parts of ourselves that we didn't even realize were in there.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot lately. Erin, I was talking with a friend yesterday who had experienced a profound loss, and she profound death, and she said, "Death puts life into sharp focus." And it sounds so simple, but it is so true for any of us who has experienced that.
Oh, absolutely, and that came through in these essays. You know, one of the extraordinary parts of this book is how personal and how generous the writers are with their shares. You know, we have an essay where, you know, someone was experiencing loss and they talk about when you're together, but you don't talk about that thing, you know, but the being together becomes so profound. There's a terrific line in this book that they talked about everything else and that kept their tongues fed, and how beautiful that is and how beautiful that memory is. And, you know, that was shared with all of us is great. You know, Agnes's point that there are 20 writers in this book and 20 different perspectives. There's something for everybody to connect to in this collection of essays.
You know, a lot of people think about living fully as in maybe a checklist. I'm living fully. I have a family. I have a job. I have hobbies. I have a purpose when I wake up every day. And it's almost as though some of these essays, Kara, are the opposite. It's not about filling up your life to live fully.
It's often about stepping out of the routine in the everyday when we really begin to see ourselves and the world that we live in differently. We begin to connect with one another differently, which I think is such an important piece of this book, is not only how we feel aliveness for ourselves, but how that reconnects us with our world and with the other people who are in it.
Well, we are talking about this whole concept of feeling fully alive. We would love for you to join the conversation. Have you had a moment where you just felt fully alive, or do you maybe live with an intention every day to be in the moment and to experience everything around you? Call and share your thoughts listening to this conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on social media. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about a new collection of essays by Maine writers about living a full life. With me, the co-editors of the book, Alive to This, Erin O'Mara, who is a contributor to the Harpswell Anchor, and Kara Douglas, owner of Fish Moon Yoga in Harpswell. Share your thoughts listening to this conversation. Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Kate Kennedy. Kate is the author of a number of books, including the novel End Over End and Skin, a memoir. Thanks so much for joining us, Kate.
Hi, Jen.
You write about a mystery apple tree, and you connect that to a family tragedy. Did you write the essay in response to the call by Kara and Erin looking for these, or had you already written it?
No, I was, before I learned about the book, I was writing about things that I would call enthusiasms, things that just delighted me in life. And one of those happened to be a mysterious apple tree that grew in my yard, which I thought was the offspring or offshoot of a crab apple. Well, it grew beautiful, large apples, green, yellow apples, which didn't seem to have anything to do with crab apples. So I was merrily going away, chasing down all kinds of rabbit holes, learning about apple trees. And then something terrible happened in our life, in the life of many. It was the death by suicide of a very beloved granddaughter who was 27 at the time. And both somehow, after a long spell of feeling frozen and alive only to a dying, if I can put it that way. But then I felt, well, I need to somehow or other get back to at least my daily life. And I decided to grow an apple tree in memory of Eliza, which is what I did. And that apple tree is now 4 feet tall and planted in my garden. It's going to go to Eliza's sister eventually and her mom, one to her mom.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah, Kate, do you, what was I going to say? And I'm so sorry to read about your granddaughter. And
thanks, Jess.
What I'm thinking about is that, you know, we just talked about how death puts life into sharp focus, but also
yes.
Suicide is so hard for people who are loved ones sometimes to understand. And I'm wondering if this idea of being fully alive is almost in contrast to sometimes feeling in this state of fog about something. I'm not saying it well. I'm not the writer you are, Kate, but this idea of feeling fully alive in such a sad and profound and difficult moment.
Well, it's we all, I think, have experienced death somehow or other. I'm 76, and one can't get away living that long and happily without it. But yes, a suicide is particularly wrenching and brings up all kinds of feelings, which were very intense. And I would say that that's a piece of living fully, one we don't want, one we may try to reject or be angry about, but it's there. It's very present. But for me, doing something in the physical world, like trying to grow a little tree, is on one level immaterial. But on the other, it had deep meaning for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And before I let you go, Kate, I'll turn to our editors, Kara and Aaron, about their response to your essay. Aaron.
I think that her essay, Kate's essay, is extraordinary, and that she weaves curiosity and a passion for life and learning into coping with a tragedy is extraordinary.
Go ahead, Kara.
I would add to that it shows the deep resilience of the human spirit that we encounter. We all will encounter these deep difficulties, and given time to be with them, what else arises? How do we return to ourselves?
Hmm. Kate, thanks so much for calling in. Yeah. Kate Kennedy, yeah. The author of the novel End Over End, 2 editions of short biographies, Remarkable Maine Women, and Skin, a memoir, which was published by Literal Books. So thank you, Kate, for calling in. We'll go to Nick, who's calling from Hollowell. Hi, Nick. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, thanks for hearing me. And just very briefly, life gets really busy. I've got my own concerns and drama. And periodically, I'm in a situation, more often than not, where I'm talking to somebody that I don't even know. And I hold their gaze just for another few seconds, and something shifts in that momentary connection, that relationship. And we can be talking about something minor or big, but there, out of that comes that sense of aliveness. And I don't do it to feel good, but it's the right thing to do at the moment, and it's an extraordinary opportunity. So I just wanted to share that with you and your listeners.
Yeah, Nick, I'm so glad you called, because Aaron, I know that one of your big goals was connectedness. You know, sometimes we might think of like feeling fully alive as something that's experienced in a solitary moment, like Kara had when she was kayaking. But connectedness was a really important goal for you all.
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the things that the caller's story illustrates, and that, you know, we've learned along doing this, but just along living, is that having authentic connection, big and small moments of authentic connection, do add to aliveness and are deeply meaningful, and that we're so lucky to have them. And you know, if I can add, one of the things that made this whole experience extraordinary was doing it with Kara. You know, Kara asked, and so of course I said yes. And it was that community and our friendship that that really mattered and really have made this whole process, have made me feel alive through this whole process.
Nick, thank you so much for calling in. We'll go to Portland and Ginny. Hi, Ginny. Go ahead.
Hi. So kind of to pick up on your discussion about how death brings life into quick focus, I was severely ill for 4 years. I was pretty much bedridden. My life stopped and was only focused on pain management. I started practicing gratitude for anything, even if it was like, at least my bed's soft. Internal dialogue of self-love and forgiveness for life itself. Now, the practice of these things was definitely fake it till you make it. I had a lot of internal dialogue questioning my gratitude for anything. It's taken a long time, like well over a decade, but my internal dialogue now is so loving and kind of, it's like I talk to a pup myself like I'm a puppy or a toddler. Because I have so much self-love, because I have a balance of self-worth, I see gratitude everywhere. I see things to be grateful for everywhere. And just that, no matter how crappy a day, no matter how crappy an election cycle, I can find meaning and joy in every single day. But it's taken a lot of years of practice, even when I didn't even believe in the practice I was doing.
Wow, Ginny, this is really profound. I have to ask you how your health is. Do you remain bedridden, or are you doing better?
Oh no, I'm not bedridden. I do have to be more careful in how I work, like how many hours and how hard the work is and how emotionally straining. So I'm a little bit, my life's a little bit dictated by that, but I'm completely not bedridden. Whatsoever.
Wonderful.
I exercise every day. I enjoy my life. It's way better. Wicked way better.
I'm so glad to hear that. And, you know, I think that every single day we wake up and we feel good, that's something to be grateful for. Anybody who has not felt good for a long time knows what a privilege it is to feel good any given morning. Erin, you're nodding.
I am. Jenny's an inspiration. And I mean, being able to access gratitude is a blessing. It is a blessing. And it is, it's a through thread in this book, even people who are in deep grief. Sorry, I'm a little tongue tied. Thank you for calling in, because what an inspiration. And, thank you.
Kara.
Thank you.
I would say that as a yoga and meditation teacher, I can speak to the power of practice, because it's going back again and again and again, even in the moments when it all feels wrong, even in the moments when you doubt your motivation or you doubt, you know, how often have I been sitting or being in a practice of meditation and I'm so distracted suddenly by all the dust bunnies under my couch or the unwashed dishes in the sink or the list of things I should be doing. And why am I sitting here wasting my time? And to go back, to stay, to go back to practice, even when you're not sure what the result will be, to just be there in that space with reality as it is, really does change who we are and how we are and how we connect with other people.
Erin.
Yeah, and if I can add, one of the great lessons, the great lesson of this caller and what Kara just said, is that if we're not careful, the busyness of life can get in the way of life. And we owe it to ourselves to take a moment to think about the things to bring us joy, the things that we are grateful for, and the things that make us feel alive, and that will make our whole experience on this planet and with each other more profound.
Thank you, Ginny, for calling in, and all the best to you. We're going to go now to Gibson Faye LeBlanc, who's the executive director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. Hi, Gibson.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
I'm great. When these two women approached you and asked you to write an essay, what did you think?
I mean, I thought it was a great concept for a collection, and I think that's proven out in this beautiful book. yeah, there's so, like they've been saying, like you all have been talking about, there's so many ways to live fully. And I think that we see this huge range of essays in the book reflecting that.
Yours is a little unconventional. It's a top 10 list in a way.
Yeah, it is. And I'm primarily a poet. And so I approach prose as a poet. For me, I'm often looking for a way to contain my prose, to have a form to it of some kind. So yeah, I wrote this top 10 list. I've always been fascinated with stats since I was a young boy. And I was going through a time of grief. And I noticed that I was paying attention to a lot of the stats of grief, even though grief isn't quantifiable. And so I kind of built this essay around my grief and also the grief of people I was seeing out in the world. You know, all these things that happen that we see that are terrible. But to me, that counting the stats, keeping track of that, keeping count, was a way to pay attention, both the inside of myself and then also into into things that were happening in the world.
Well, one thing I love is I do feel as though there's some themes that recur. One of them is a connectedness to nature and also dealing with a moment of grief. But you bring up, and I think this is another very important part of being alive, laughter. You write, I have mostly never forgotten how to laugh. I accept that bubbling up breath, that pleasure in the throat, whatever, whenever and wherever it happens, as another impractical, incalculable gift. And do we feel more alive than when we laugh? And even when we laugh, when maybe someone might think we ought not to be laughing, when we ought to be grieving.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is such a great point. And it's something I've spent a lot of time thinking about. Yeah, I think often some of the most memorable moments in grief are the ones where this laughter comes in, humor reenters. And, you know, that's a way to remind whoever, you know, ourselves, other people in the room, that we're human, that we're alive, that we're here. And laughter is something we do no matter what. And sometimes even, you know, we need it even more so in those hard times.
Well, Gibson, thank you so much for taking part in this and calling in today. Gibson Fay LeBlanc, a writer, poet, and executive director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. Let's see here. We've got a call from Ellie in Portland. Hi, Ellie. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, awesome. This is my first time calling into the show, but I listen to it all the time, and I love it so much.
Wonderful.
I have been friends with Kara since our senior year of college, so I do know her really well and her life as well, but I'm going to try to focus on my question. I was mountain biking 6 weeks ago, which is one of the ways that I feel fully alive, and I had a seriously bad accident and almost died, and I was in the ICU for 6 days. And Kara was one of the friends that reached out to me and sent me some meditation, guided meditation on the phone for me to listen to. And it really helped me through the pain. Long story short, of course, I'm feeling like I'm really, really appreciative to be alive right now. And the very first thing I got to go to after being in the hospital and then at home with 24/7 care was the book launch to Alive to This. And I was sitting there with my walker and all my bandages, and I was just struck by the diversity of authors and their lives and the diversity of topics included in the collection, and how amazing it was that this one book and then that whole event could collate that. And that just reminded me of the power of collaboration. And Kara and I have done tons of collaborating together over the years. But my question for Kara and Aaron is, did you find in this project that collaboration itself was a mode toward that state of feeling fully alive?
Yeah, absolutely. I've said over and over again that I could not have brought this whole idea all the way to the finish line without Aaron. I Aaron's writing in the Harpswell Anchor each month is just such a delight. And Gibson was speaking about the power of laughter, and Aaron, one of Aaron's gifts is being able to just state things in such a delightful way that you can't help but laugh. Her essays in the book reflect this. Without the collaboration that she and I shared, there, I don't know if there would even be a full collection. Agnes coached us quite a bit. There were moments where it says right in the introduction to the book, we found ourselves in a literary sink or swim moment. Agnes and Jim took a big risk in inviting me to be the editor of this collection, because despite the fact that I've spent my whole life writing and actually also used to write for the Harpswell Anchor, I have never really considered myself an editor. So there were a lot of risks taken and a lot of ways that we created safety nets for each other. All of the writers took a huge risk in exposing their own vulnerabilities, in sharing deeply from their own lives. It was like an invisible line of connection between each of these writers, most of whom don't even know each other, but together they've created something really beautiful.
Aaron, did you want to add to that?
I do. Kara is so generous. And, you know, she says she couldn't have done this without me. She certainly could have, because she's extraordinary. I couldn't have done this without her. And our collaboration really was a joy. It was fun to have our walking meetings, or, you know, sit in her sunroom and talk about these essays and talk about what they meant to us and how we thought they would go together. And even talk about ones that, hey, I get this, but you don't, or, you know, I don't get this, but you do, and get to talk about that. And because we worked together, because we had these conversations, I think it's a better book. And you know, all this did is it just grew my admiration and respect for Kara. I think she's extraordinary.
Ellie, thanks so much for calling in. We are going to take another quick break. We'd love to hear from you. What is a moment when you felt fully alive? Is this a practice for you? Do you think about it? Or listening to the program today, is this the first time you thought about a moment in your life in the context of being fully alive? Send us an email, a brief email, talk@mainpublic.org, call 1-800-399-3566, or post to Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Our topic today, thoughts on living a full life, living fully. Joining me are editors of the new collection of essays by Maine writers. The book is called Alive to This, and our guests are Kara Douglas and Aaron O'Mara. You can join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email, or if you're really quick, the email address talk@mainpublic.org, or you could put a post on Facebook or Instagram. On the line with us now is Karim Doerdag. He is the CEO of GWI, a telecommunications company in Maine. He's also a published poet and essayist, and he was the librettist of a musical that was performed in Maine last year. Karim, you've been on Maine Calling before, but usually in the context of talking about high-speed internet or something like that. This is a whole other side of you.
Indeed, and a welcome one.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, your essay is really about home. And I was thinking about the sort of cliche, home is where the heart is. You took that a step further.
I did. I mean, obviously, being an immigrant these days has a certain complexity and nuance associated with it. So I felt it was my obligation to try to at least ensure my little ephemeral part in making sure that the democratic society is still knit together. But yes, I want to at least bring the perspective of what it means to not just have one home, but multiple homes. And I think home is a word that's replete with many reference and inference for all of us. So I just wanted to express that probably from a viewpoint that one doesn't necessarily see in print too often, which is there's a multiplicity. I sort of like Walt Whitman, we contain multitudes of ourselves. And I want to express that. And I was very fortunate and very, very deeply, deeply grateful for the opportunity to do so.
When you heard from Kara and Aaron and they were looking about for essays about living fully, did you cast about to try to figure out what to write about, or did it come to you right away?
Nah, fairly right away. I think these things are always sort of percolating in all of us, and I may have found some intentionality or some agency in making sure that it was available for expression. But these are things that tend to swim in my head fairly often.
And the reason I asked the question I did, and it may not be clear to our listeners, is that you start by saying you have two hearts.
I do, Pakistani and Turkish. And I end up the essay by saying I actually have a third one, which is American. And that's a function of being an immigrant in this country. I was fortunate enough I was born and raised in Pakistan, but I had Turkish parents. So I'm a product of two birth cultures at the same time. I'm trilingual, and then I came to the United States when I was a student. And I've created a life here with the much loving grace of a whole ton of people. And so, yes, two hearts, three homes, a sense of expression and a sense of obligation to make sure that things are expressed in a way that allows us to belong to each other. I think that's, there's an ancient Talmudic saying, when you touch one life, you touch a universe. And I do, to my core, believe that. And I think it's a good thing for us. If we have to live fully, what are we intentional about? What do we want to spend our time and our day thinking about and having the agency to do something about it? And I think those things percolate in me. I have a very strong, obviously, oral tradition because being Turkish and Pakistani at the same time. We sing a lot of songs. We read a lot of poems. We memorize a whole ton of stuff that we say to each other. So it tends to be part of our vernacular, how to express where we belong. Not too different than you or the listeners on this radio show right now. How do we belong? How do we want to belong? How do we want to be able to evolve to the belonging? Those are nice questions to ask. I think we have some time in the day to just ask those questions.
Karam, that's beautiful. Kara and Aaron, anything you'd like to say about Karam's essay? Go ahead, Aaron.
If anybody has the opportunity to hear Karam read his essay or read a part of it, please take that opportunity because it is beautiful and lyrical, and hearing it in his voice is a really moving experience. I also want to thank him when he stood up at the reading. The first thing he said was, and I'm sorry, it's going to be a bad paraphrase, but that art is important. Art can save us. And that really shines through in what he read.
Karam, I'm kind of bummed that we're so late in the program and we don't have the minutes to have you read your essay on the air. I was going to put you on the spot, but then I looked at the clock. But I really appreciate you calling in. Karam Doerdag, CEO of GWI and a published writer whose essay is included in this book, Alive to This. I'm going to go to an email here. This is from Susan. I would like to speak to the connection with grief in living fully. I lost my husband a year and a half ago and held him as he breathed his last. He was very alive and colorful man as he was dying. I felt that he was entrusting me with his vitality so that I was living for both of us going forward, not in experiences or occasions, but in spirit. It was his final and greatest gift to me. That's really quite beautiful, Susan. Thank you for writing that in. And Kara, we haven't used the word spirit, but we are talking about the human spirit here.
Yeah, we are talking about the human spirit and how it weaves itself through all aspects of our lives. And that is part of this wholeness that we can return to. I don't have to tell anyone listening that we live in a moment of deep divisiveness. And being divided as a culture is partly the result of being divided within ourselves. We all have aspects of ourselves that we've exiled, usually for very good reasons. And at the same time, what a gift it is that we and the people we love even exist at all. And what a gift from Susan. She was talking about her husband passing his aliveness to her. What a gift that is to carry that aliveness forward. There's a real healing that can happen there. When we have a chance to realign the aspects of ourselves. When we connect with nature, when we connect with the world we live in, we connect with each other differently. We see each other differently. The caller from, I believe it was from Halliwell, who talked about holding the gaze in a stranger's eyes for just a moment longer. He's seeing that person. And that is what really takes down the barriers that we are so trapped in right now. In this collection, Aaron and I really wanted to include essays that would help us see beyond all those differences that turn us away from one another. We want readers to discover a sense of a shared experience, stories that they can relate to help them frame their own life experiences more clearly and relate to other people more compassionately. And that is all about spirit.
We'll go to Mary Beth, who's calling from Sydney. Hi, Mary Beth. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I was probably on top of that, talking about when you have to say goodbye to someone and you have to let them go. And sometimes it's because they didn't wear a seatbelt, and so now they're paralyzed and don't want to go on. And your greatest love is to let them go. But the moment they're gone, you realize how alive you are and that life goes on. And as much as you miss them and love them, you live, like the other caller said, in as full a life as you can. Celebrating them and their laughter and their joy.
Mary Beth, thank you so much for calling in and having the courage to call in. I can tell that it's emotional for you. I'm going to move on to Carl Little, calling from MDI. And Carl, you also have an essay in this book. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jen. Yeah, nice to be there. I just wanted to say that, I'm obviously thrilled to be in the collection. But I like to think that the cover of the book may actually be an illustration of my essay, which is all about being immersed in Sergeant Mountain Pond in Acadia, a pond I discovered when I first moved here and have now shared with my family on a number of occasions. It's kind of a place of pilgrimage. Anyway, it's really about immersion in nature. So my alive to this is being alive to nature and to being in a wild pond.
Carl, thank you for calling in. And I share that. I share that immersion. I do it in the Atlantic Ocean, but the moment of being underwater and entirely immersed is maybe not a lifetime of feeling fully alive, but at least a moment. Aaron, you're nodding.
Yeah, well, I think those moments are so important, and being present enough to clock it, to take it in, to experience it, and to tuck it into your memory, that is aliveness, and that is the feeling that will really carry us forward in a more profound way.
Kara.
I want to credit the cover photo to Kate Power, who is a local photographer. Her photographs are the ones that appear in the book. And yes, Carl, that image always makes me think of your essay. It always brings me right back there.
Carl, thanks so much for calling in. And one thing I loved, those of you who know who Carl is know that he has written and published many books on Maine art. And it is interesting to me that your essay wasn't about art, but about swimming.
Well, I love to swim. with my family.
Thank you so much. Aaron, we just have a few seconds left. And I was just wondering if you have any sort of final thoughts today as you, here we are in this day that's pretty stressful for many people in America. And how are you centering yourself and being alive to this day?
Yeah, I'm practicing gratitude, which is, something that's come up a few times in this call. And I'm grateful to be here, grateful for Kara, grateful for this book. And when I'm thinking about this book and my community and the opportunities that community and authentic connection have afforded me, it feels like I'm lucky enough that on a cold day, somebody would open their coat and their arms to me to share their warmth. And, how lucky am I?
Well, I really appreciate both of you being here. The voice you just heard, Erin O'Mara, co-editor of Alive to This and a contributor to the Harpswell Anchor, and Kara Douglas, also co-editor of Alive to This and owner of Fish Moon Yoga and Harpswell. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can find all of our past shows and sign up for our weekly newsletter at mainecalling.org. Every week we tell you what's coming up the next week, or what we're working on at least. And a reminder that you can share your thoughts anytime by downloading the Maine Public Vox Pop app. Tomorrow on the program, the benefits of giving to others. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.